This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League, the Champions League and the Europa League as well. I'm Robbie Musto and he's Robbie Earl. And here are today's topics in our final episode of the season. Chelsea are European champions. We will discuss what went right for the Blues and Thomas Tuchel and what went wrong for Pep Guardiola and Manchester City. Brentford are coming to the Premier League. We'll discuss what to expect from the Bees. And with this being our final episode this season, we will hand out our Two Robbies Awards. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Oh, Robbie Earl, my friend. Champions League final, two English teams, lots of anticipation, lots of expectation. Chelsea. We're not famous, Rob. They win the game 1-0. Kai Havertz scoring that winning goal right before half-time. So much to talk about, mate. I guess I'll let you start and kind of maybe with a summary before we get into some nitty-gritty details.
A summary. Okay. In a game that was going to be close, I think, whoever won it, in a game where... The questions I went into whether City were going to make the treble, win their first Champions League title were, will this game get in their heads? Will Pep Guardiola overthink the situation that we've seen a couple of times in the past? How much can this team keep the fluidity and rhythm that they've shown during the season? Because if so, Manchester City win the game. My reflections are that a team that was built to be more attacking, officially, I believe, had one shot on target. A team that can dominate the ball but needs to have a defensive structure came up short when Gundogan was left in the middle of the park with no Fernandinho and no Rodri. Questions after this game, whether we like it or not, whether we believe in it or not, will be asked about Pep Guardiola. And does Pep get to a certain position in certain finals and lose his nerve? Because if this is Brendan Rodgers, we're saying this about Brendan Rodgers.
No, I thought you brought it up, Rob, in our last podcast, actually, about Pep overthinking things. And we all, because they know each other very well, and we've watched so many games this season of these two teams in the both competitions, because on this podcast we look at the Champions League as well as the Premier League.
Yeah.
And we knew exactly what to expect. Now, we did talk about the tight team lineups, didn't we, Rob, and who we thought might play. I think we came to Werner, Kai Havertz and Mason up front.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, what we saw. But this final was dominated by the team news, Rob. You know, not just me tweeting out on social media. Basically, everybody in football, Rob, really, tweeting out about Rodri, Fernandinho. Wow. Not one of them playing. And that really was the narrative. And Pep has put himself out there. He's done something very, very different, very, very unexpected. Of course, he would have spent hours thinking about what to do, Rob, and studying Tuchel and Chelsea and those two defeats in different competitions. And he came up with that decision. Now, you know, I thought just in general, before we get into the details of Rob, what right and wrong, in general, I love this game. The first 5 or 10 minutes, I'm like, how good is this? Kind of end to end. We saw that from right from the first whistle, and both teams were going to have a go. And this was kind of a wow. Okay. Didn't expect this, really. Really didn't expect it. But based on the lineup, it wasn't surprising given what Pep had decided to do. Now, do you want to start with Chelsea's good bit, or which team do you want to start with first? Our producer thinks we should start with Chelsea.
I mean, the headline's Pep, but I think we've got to start with Chelsea in terms of the trust that Thomas Tuchel gets from his players. I think having beaten Chelsea, beaten Man City twice, and I know we maybe had a slight disagreement. I said, if you've beaten someone twice and you're going in the third game, it does give you an advantage. I don't care what people say. In my head, with this manager, believing in what we do, I think that the Chelsea got a lift. And I just want to go back to the team sheet, because I heard a couple of things where when Chelsea saw the team sheet, it gave them a lift. It gave them a belief that they, with that setup working as they do, that they could play. The setup involved the back three that we felt would be Rudiger, Thiago, Rhys James, from the right side with or Azpilicueta. Sometimes they exchange position, but generally one is the wing back, Chilwell on the left hand side, N'Golo Kante, Jorginho, and then through with Werner up top, Havertz off the right hand side, interesting enough, and Mount off the left. And it looked like it to me, Thomas Tuchel had deployed Havertz and Mount to work off them with the fullback positions, so that he didn't get too many overloads going the other way. He allowed his centre backs, Rob. Every time a front man went to receive the ball, one of those centre backs would come out of that position and go tight. And they marked on what we call goal side. So any time a centre forward went in, the next centre back was ready on that side of the pitch to win the ball. So it just stopped Manchester City's flow and rhythm. They couldn't build up through midfield as they wanted. They couldn't really get Kevin De Bruyne or Foden in the game. And as I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, well, this team's well set up for Chelsea, and they were growing in confidence the more the game went on.
Yeah, I mean, I think my note really was normal, solid, grooved Chelsea. It was nothing different. There was no changes that we didn't see coming. I think obviously going into this massive game, Thomas Tuchel did a great job of making sure and drumming into his players, we just do our jobs really well. And they did. They suffered that injury to Thiago. Christensen came on, what was it, 38th minute? I think that change was made, which is a blow, but didn't affect anything. We've seen Andreas Christensen many times play a really great job for Thomas Tuchel in the middle of the back three. So nothing. James played the higher wing-back role that, you know, we've seen him switch that, which is a bit unusual, and I guess he has his reasons for doing that. So I didn't think, I mean, everybody in that team did their job really well. But of course, as you said, they were helped by Pep's kind of tactical plan, where Tuchel had nothing of that. He just had his same setup. And N'Golo Kante was fit and available to play, as was Kai Havertz. And I think even after the first kind of few minutes, Rob, they got in behind a couple of times.
Yeah, a couple of times.
Werner
had a couple of great chances. He's had one that he's hit his own foot, not get the thing. He's had one when it was on the near post. If he's in better form, then there might be one or two goals up.
Yeah, and Kai Havertz, Rob, scores right before halftime, a huge, huge goal for his club, for himself personally. His first Champions League goal ever, I believe. Of course, there's been mixed reception about how this player settled into English football, Rob. And let's face it, he hasn't had a great season at Chelsea. He hasn't found it easy to settle into English football. But I think as time's gone on, there has been some improvements. Mm. And, you know, predominantly playing as a number nine, which he's done before, which has looked good, but he was on the right-hand side. But just on him, Robin, and how good it is for him and how it's going to affect his future. Mm. That was a big moment for Kai Havertz, Rob, wasn't it? And we saw it afterwards with the interview, and he was pretty fired up.
Yeah, he's 21 years of age, Rob. He's still a baby in football terms. He's 3, 4, 5 more years of real development till we get to the 25, 26, where we should see what we want. You're right, that he'll be forever remembered, as many players are, as the one that won scored the goal, that won the Champions League against Pep's Man City. You're right, he's big without being like gangly, looks awkward. His touch is better than we think in terms of he knows how to absorb the ball. He knows where to play the ball. His tactical understanding is good. His run for the goal and his timing with waiting for the goalkeeper knocking it past him. He's gonna be a big player for Chelsea. And when they work out that top end of the pitch and how it forms and how it plays, and once Tuchel gets a few rotations in with the movement and how they're gonna play, he's gonna be a huge player for Chelsea. And he's going to be a player that will score goals and or can sit in midfield and dig it out a little bit as well if you need him. He did something once, and Aspilicueta said it after the game, where during the game, it was somewhere like the 70-odd minute, he started up front and he ran the length of the pitch, Rob, to get a block tackle on somebody. Yeah. It might be De Bruyne or somebody before he went off or something. And it was like, wow. He's not the luxury. You know, I'm 21 years of age. I've come for record money. He's also a roll his sleeves up. I'll be part of the fight as well. That's the huge thing when you talk about those very top players who also have that work ethic about them as well.
Mm. It's a good point. And I thought it was a few times as well when the ball went up to him. I sat with my son watching the game, and sometimes we went up to Werner. You know, it bounces off him a little bit.
It goes away, yeah.
But Havertz is different. That's where he's good, because he's got a lovely touch. He protects the ball really well. He's a big guy. Yeah. But just sort of back to front, Rob, let's just go through now the team a little bit, Chelsea, and kind of feel or explain what they did right. And I think defensively, the team was superb. And Man City's common threat comes in the wide areas. Riyad Mahrez on one side, and it was Raheem Sterling. We'll get into that in the Man City part of it. But I thought Ben Chilwell and particularly Reece James had strong, strong defensive performances there, Robert, in an area where they had to be really, really strong. And it was Reece James who played the wider role. Aspilicueta made some blocks, Rob. You know, you think throughout the game where he came across and cleared. Rudiger did the same thing as well.
Great block on Foden, didn't he? Foden looked like he was going to
go to the outside of his spot. Yeah. Christensen came into the game and did really well. Yeah. So I think defensively in that area, they were absolutely fantastic. Now into midfield, again, we know what Jorginho does and done his work. And N'Golo Kante, he will get special. he's going to get special attention from everybody, and rightly so. Phenomenal. A phenomenal game from N'Golo Kante, where he was everywhere. The interceptions, the amount of attacks that ended with an N'Golo Kante gets a foot in. What did you call him one time, Rob? The toe or something, wasn't it?
He's got the biggest toe. He's got the most important toe in world football. He just toes it away from people. He gets a toe in when you're controlling. He toes it past people. I mean, you shouldn't be allowed to be that good. You shouldn't be allowed to a guy who, a few days ago, Rob, we weren't sure if he was going to play with a hamstring injury. You know, a hamstring, which means it's going to maybe limit the energy and where he can get on a pitch. I mean, this guy is another level. I mean, the tackle on Kevin De Bruyne is that when De Bruyne's running away from, you know, and getting into that last third, and he does that slide tackle and hooks it round. I mean, that's like a goal. That's like a brilliant goalkeeping save. He's another level, this fella. Absolute another level. He can break up play, he can start play, he can bomb forward. He got between two players a back post for a header. I mean, he's 4 foot nothing, and he's like this little pocket rocket. He goes all over the place. You know, the smile, the look on the face, everything's just like, you know, I'll just take on. I mean, he's a difference maker, by the way. He as much as anyone, changes up that Chelsea lineup.
Yeah, and now Robbie's won everything, really, isn't he? In the game, pretty much all the big stuff anyway, in N'Golo Kanté, and a performance that was sensational. And just rounding off with that team, I mean, I just think the way, again, that Pep played, even the attacking players were bright. They were threatening right from the first whistle. They got in behind many, many times. And it was a dream game for Chelsea, given the matchup. And also, like, when you think of bigger picture, Rob, we would be remiss to forget what Frank Lampard did in this campaign.
He got them
not just getting through the group stage, Rob, to get into the knockout stages where Thomas Tuchel took over, but last season, getting him to fourth spot in the Premier League to get them in the competition for this season, a difficult season with the transfer ban and the young players. So he does deserve it. A big mention to get him into this situation for Tuchel to come over and do what he did.
Just before you move on, Rob, we have to just wanted to give a mention. It's a good chat with Frank and the base of what he wants. There's no doubt Tuchel's taking them to another level. And, you know, I don't think, no disrespect to Frank, I don't see Frank winning the Champions League as Tuchel has. Mason Mount, my friend, Mason Mount deserves a special mention. You know, a kid from the academy. It's one thing that a stick that's been there to beat Chelsea with a little bit. Like, there's none of their own. They don't come through. They only spend big money, blah, 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 blah. Mason Mount, my friend, is a bright, athletic, intelligent footballer who's got the world at his feet.
Yeah.
I mean, the turn, the pass, the you know, we marvel about Kevin De Bruyne at times. We marvel about, you know, German talent and Dutch talent and Spanish talent and the great players. Mason Mount has the capability to be right up there with the very best, mate. Right up with the very best. And he did a lovely interview after the game where he talked about what it means to his family, what sacrifice he's been. He's come through the academy. He wants to drive other young kids who are in that Chelsea Academy to say, you can get in the first team, you can be successful. And he was quite emotive about it, and he was welling up a little bit. And I was just thinking, wow, what is 2 or 3 years? This is from the kid who was on loan at Derby with Frank. And again, Frank needs some credit because he bought him back and played him when maybe some people wasn't. But we're seeing a footballer there, mate. We're seeing a guy, top of his game, Champions League winner, going into the Euros. I mean, we don't often see this level of talent. With Rob, what I would say, I don't ever want to sound rude or something, but with the balance that Mason Mount has got as well, you know what I mean? He looks like a sensible kid who is enjoying it and going to make the most of it.
Yeah, I think sensible, intelligent, humble, all these words, Rob, that we know as having long, long careers in professional football in England is incredibly important. I remember as a player, you know, getting asked many times, you know, what's the secrets? And I remember talking about what's in between the ears is so, so important. The amount of talent that I'm sure we both saw that didn't go on to fulfill that because they couldn't get it right mentality-wise, attitude-wise, etc. So, yeah, you know what? And we thoroughly enjoyed the game. I thoroughly enjoyed the interviews and the celebrations, Rob. And, and it goes on to when a player is there with his parents, you know, having photographs with that big old trophy. I mean, that is tough to think how it can get much better than that. But following on from that, we did see Christian Pulisic, Rob. First American on the male side to play in a Champions League final, a Champions League winner now, to get on the pitch and to play the last half an hour or whatever. Again, we saw his parents on the field, Rob. And it was picked up, wasn't it, I think, on social media. I thought it was really interesting where he had that US men's soccer hoodie on. Really? And his father, do you see that, Rob? His father just moved the medal to the back. So when he lifted up the Champions League trophy, the US soccer emblem was there. And obviously it means a lot to his parents. I mean, an incredible, I mean, moment, really, Rob, to allow your son, and we've both got boys, to leave the US, to go and develop his dream, to live that dream, to go and move overseas in Europe and try and develop as a player, to see him play and win the UEFA Champions League, which is the pinnacle in club football.
Absolutely. That's
phenomenal.
Yeah. And his first US male to play in Champions League final, and obviously now won it as well. So, yeah, it's a brilliant story. And he came on and played his part, Rob, which we knew he would be. Would do. Yeah. And he's another who, you know, looking forward. He's got to be looking forward to a career under Tuchel and something that can. Just before, again, I've got to, just before we move on, mate, I've got to go one more place on Chelsea.
Well, go on then.
And it was a man stand in the stands who was supporting his team, watching his team with his family, Roman Abramovich, Robin.
Yeah.
Deserves a special mention.
Yeah.
In a time of Super Leagues when I don't particularly think they knew what they were doing and whatever, they were the first ones out. The time where Abramovich has sacked this one, you know, the Frank Lampard sacking. It's showing like trophy, biggest trophy in Europe.
Yeah.
Yet again, a man who puts his money in, Rob. You know, we see the Cronkies and we see, you know, some people talking about Glazers and what and the football clubs that they're neither there. They don't put the money in. They're taking money out. I mean, this guy, Rob, is a Chelsea fan, first and foremost. You see him in the stand, he's a fan. He's got his family, he's cheering, he's nervous, he's anxious. He's put the money in, he supports his managers. Yes, he gets rid of them when that's the time, but you know what? That's the way he works, and he's delivered trophies. And I just think in a time when, you know, ownership of football clubs is very much on the agenda, Roman Abramovich, for his time at that football club, deserves a special mention.
Totally agree. It's something that I made a note of as well. It was Di Matteo, wasn't it? Roberto Di Matteo, that was brought in mid-season, and they win the Champions League. I was there in Munich.
2012, wasn't it?
Calling the game, for another network. And I was like, wow. And he did it. And it's happened again. He's made a massive call. And, you know, there's probably people that are not fans of the hiring and the firing.
Yeah,
speed happens with Abramovich, but my goodness, don't they win? It looks like, Rob, just swinging back to the manager, Thomas Tuchel,
yeah,
it looks like he's on the brink of signing a new contract, an extended contract.
Yeah.
And I just want to get on, before we get on to where does Chelsea sit in English football and in London, by the way, Rob? I want to have a little discussion on that. I think Thomas Tuchel, again, is his last person that we should, you know, tip our hat to. I mean, From everything that involves him around the team, between pre-match press statements, from the way that he coaches, from the way that he is so passionate, from the way that he celebrated, he hugged his players, from the way that he goes into the dressing room, gets the champagne, and he's jumping around, he's right in the middle of the players. I mean, I should imagine he's a tough guy to work for, because that passion, he gets angry on the sideline. There's no question he's got that fire. And I'll tell you, if there's one thing that I am certain of, that the best managers have a nasty side to them, Rob. They have a nasty streak. There's a bit of fear factor there with players, and he's obviously got it. But to take this team into this final after a little bit of a rocky period in the Premier League, Rob, towards the end of the season, where they lost games you thought they would, the last game of the season,
didn't make top four.
Solid decisions, solid team selections, solid performance, great celebration. What a brilliant, brilliant signing it was from Roman Abramovich that he's made in Thomas Tuchel, Rob.
I've got my same note. Let's not forget, he was a losing manager in the Champions League final last season with PSG. Came back 6 months later. In 6 months, Rob, he's been Pep Guardiola's team 3 times. He's had to pick his team up after an FA Cup final defeat, a possible not finishing in the top four. He's gone into a football club. He's affected the dressing room. He's affected the players, and he's affected the fans. And you can do no more than those things in a six-month period. And we could be, with the right support, and maybe we want to talk this, with the right support, with the right financial and ability to run the club as he needs to, we could be talking about a Pep, Tuchel, possibly Klopp, like we had in the old days with Jose and Sir Alex and Wenger. We could be talking about top managers with top clubs battling out for the top trophies.
Yeah, I mean, it's just phenomenal. And a little later in the episode, Rob, we are going to, right towards the end, we're going to talk about the potential for next season and the odds.
Yeah.
for the championship for next year. Yeah, I just think, and finally, Rob, before we move on to Man City in a bit more detail, I just got me thinking, there was something on social media, and that's where it's useful sometimes, because there'll be stuff out there that it's kind of interesting. Where did Chelsea sit in London? Now, I did a little bit, just a quick checking of some numbers. Now, of course, Arsenal, what we're talking about, there was a suggestion that Chelsea are almost the biggest club in London, or on the way to becoming it. Of course, you can't forget Arsenal's success. And they won 13 Premier League titles. They won 14, which is a record number of FA Cups.
Yeah.
But limited in European success, Rob. I think the Cup Winners' Cup. Chelsea, 6 Premier League titles. So that's quite a few behind.
Yeah.
8 FA Cups, but 2 Champions Leagues now, and a Europa League.
Yeah.
And I think with the see that the way that the clubs are the direction they're going right now, of course, it's going to take a long, long time to really be able to rub a
stamp.
It's
a generation, isn't it? Yes.
But I think it's actually, I think it's 2 Europa Leagues.
2 Europa Leagues, because
I mean, that's big time European success. 2 Champions League trophies. I mean, what do you think, Rob?
Where are we going to be in 5, 10 years? I've been on the air, Rob, and I said, you know, one of the things with Arteta and Arsenal that is Arsenal are, I lived in London for 20 years. I've played there, worked in the media. Arsenal are the biggest club in London. Still the biggest club in London. But if we're talking about current, if we're talking about recent, if we're talking about where the shift, Arsenal is in doubt. Arsenal are, I'm not so sure anymore. You say those number of 2 Champions League, 2 Europa Leagues, 8 FA Cups, 6 Premier Leagues. It's catch up, Rob. And there's a group of, was it 2004 the last time Arsenal have won a title? 2004.
Yeah.
It's the last time they've won a title. I mean, they're becoming less relevant. Chelsea are becoming a dominant force in you know, due to the Abramovich era, due to good management and some quality players, due to now, Rob, kids coming in from the academy. So, you know, the Mounts and the Gilmores and the Abrahams and the Reece Jameses, you know, these are the right mix. As you're right, it might be 10 to 15 more years of winning at this level. But if they do, Rob, there's going to be a shift. And that's what Arsenal fans, Arsenal owners, Arsenal manager has to start to get his head around.
The club has been built, Rob, from a club that wasn't a massive club.
We've played there, Rob, where it was nowhere near sellouts. And,
incredible.
Know, it was a different world.
And Abramovich, of course, at the time, he threw this huge amount of money into this football club and he got a little bit maligned. But what he was doing, Rob, and I think he said it like years and years ago, is that I want this club to sustain its size. And I tell you what, they're not far off it. Now, I know they've just had a big recent spending of money and a lot of that probably... I mean, we're assuming there's some kind of financial fair play going on. But what I'm trying to say is between player development, recruitment of young players, those ones out on loan, they've got a player investment business, basically, haven't they? They have. They bring in the young players, they develop them, they put them in the shop window, they send them out on loan. They either make the first team, not many do, most, but the others, they get sold. That's a revenue source that I'm not sure anybody has been as good over the years at Chelsea of that. So between that, between the great talent that's brought in. I mean, Chelsea in America, Rob, and I know Arsenal's also huge here, but Chelsea are big, and they're big, and it's based on what they've done, you know, over the last...
It feels like they're pretty much on par with Liverpool. Like, United are still up, and then Liverpool and Chelsea are kind of vying for next spot. But you're right, it's interesting times ahead, and you kind of feel with Tuchel in charge with a long contract could be some successful years ahead for Chelsea. Yeah.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We have got to talk about Man City because they will be the story. Be dominated by Pep Guardiola. Be dominated, Robbie Musto, by a team sheet that had no Fernandinho or no Rodri for only the second time in 62 games, either one or the other of those has played. Only the second time.
You know what, Rob? I'll try and do this as quickly as possible and why it's such a big surprise. Let me just recap on what City has done or had done to get to this point yesterday to the Champions League final. And it was pretty much, we talked about it many times on this podcast, it was a 4-4-2 with two false number nines, Kevin De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva. Yeah. And it always involved a Rodri mostly, but more recently, Fernandinho. Yeah. And what happened, and that put Phil Foden on the left-hand side, Riyad Mahrez on the right-hand side, and you'd see Zinchenko popping into midfield to play alongside Fernandinho, which allowed Gundogan to get forward
to go and
go and score some goals. And that's what, throughout the season, he kind of shook the squad around, systems around, different individuals. That was it. Yeah. So for him to go away from that system, to go away from those personnel, to that strategy, I thought was like, wow, really? Mm-hmm. You're throwing, and I want to get your take on why he did it, Rob, and I'll let you have a jump back in a second. You are throwing all that successful kind of evolution over this season away. You're trying something different to try, and whatever reason it was, and I want to get your take on that. But it was very different. So the lineup then became, you had the same back four, and Zinchenko did push into midfield, but a slightly different role in midfield. Gundogan was the sitting player, very different. Zinchenko into midfield, but in a left-sided thing, very different. Bernardo Silva was on the right side of that little setup in midfield, very different from being a false nine. Phil Foden, more central, like a number 10, if you like, in this game, Rob. Yeah. Not on the left-hand side. Very different. Raheem Sterling, not been in great form, comes in on the left-hand side. Very different. And Kevin De Bruyne, as a top player, the false nine, so that's kind of similar coming into midfield. So that, in a nutshell, is the tactical kind of changes that he made. Yeah. And it was like, wow. There's so many changes, so many tweaks, and you could see it. And that's why I said at Chelsea, Rob, it was solid. Yeah. Reliable, grooved, normal Chelsea, and City went in this different direction, and it just didn't work.
Absolutely, and it's, everybody saw the team sheet, everybody saw the team. This team, at its best, I read a lovely line, always has a fire blanket. It has a Rodri or a Fernandinho.
It's been so important, Rob, this season for him.
If you take the goal that Chelsea scored, Havertz makes a run on the inside of Zinchenko. Zinchenko never quite gets goal side. He takes on the goal. Werner makes a run out to the left wing that takes Diaz out with him and opens up the space. I guarantee you, if Fernandinho's playing, he either takes a runner at Werner and lets Diaz stay, or Diaz takes a runner and he drops into that space where Havertz is coming. He cuts the lane off because that's what he does as well as anybody in the game. His tactical understanding of where to be and how to be is so important. And for Pep to take that out, Rob, and Pep said he knew what he was doing and he did it to give his team the best chance of winning. I think told me one thing, and I was having a beer on a Friday night with a few mates, and I just said a little bit like I did on the podcast. Something about Chelsea, something about Pep and how much they want it and would they need it, maybe a little bit of a tinkery.
Yeah.
Pep didn't trust all that he's done, Rob.
On the big day, he didn't trust
all that he's done.
No.
And you know what that tells you? As great a manager as he is, there's still a little flaws. This makes a game brilliant. There's still little flaws. as great as he is, as much as he's done, as he's changed English football with the goalkeepers, with the false nines, with the play, for all that, he didn't trust his own processes.
Yeah, and that little detail. And if you think back, Rob, he's done this before. There's history here. Yeah. He certainly did it at Bayern Munich, I remember, where he changed them around. Munich. And he's done it at Manchester City in different situations. And we've always said that, Leon. And I'll tell you, it's so interesting because I have been so, and I have been all season, so up on this City team, Rob. And I said to him, they're going to win it this year. This is it. Because defensively, with Ruben Dias and John Stones' improvement and having a holding player, they are now less susceptible to the counter-attack. And it was seeing him all the way through. And yet he goes away from one of those main ingredients to that in the last, most important game in his career for many, many years.
Yeah.
And it came back to bite him in the backside. Also, just on that, the goal, Rob, Zinchenko as well. Zinchenko moving into midfield is a cool new age. It's a cool thing. But it does bring its own risk. So, because he couldn't get around in time and he wasn't ready to cover like a normal fullback would cover. Yeah. So, you add all these things into the mix and it made them super more vulnerable. And for what? And he talks about Gundogan, he can maneuver the ball quickly. He can quickly pass the ball between the lines. Pep wasn't confident that the setup with a holding midfield player, they needed another one. He needed another maker, and it was Raheem Sterling, that would be enough to find a way around through
possession.
This Chelsea team that have been strong defensively. Mm-hmm. And you're right. He lost the faith in that system right at the end there. And I just, he'll have regrets, Rob. You know,
he'll have, absolutely.
I did read something first thing this morning where he was pretty inconsolable, decisions that he made in the past. And I think he had to apologize to Philipp Lahm at Bayern Munich with what he tried to do. And, you know, you saw him at the end there. And it's like, it is astonishing, Rob, and it's the reason why what you said just before we came on, Rob. Was it 2000? Like, it's been like a decade since winning the Champions League.
You're at the point where we're saying, like, you know, that's 2011 with Barcelona.
There you go, 2011 with Barcelona. And he's had brilliant teams. He's had champion domestic teams, and yet he still felt the need to do it. It's just, it made them weak defensively, Rob. Yeah. The structure wasn't the same.
It strangely made them weaker going forward. None of those front players.
That's the other part.
None of those front players had a day. De Bruyne couldn't get in the game. Foden looked like he couldn't quite find his position. Rhys James had Sterling sewn up. Mahrez couldn't influence on the other side.
It affected everything. Anilka Gundogan, 64th minute, Fernandinho comes on for Bernardo, Rob. Mm. He does his thing, and all of a sudden, Gundogan, he almost got tackled. Everybody, the whole thing looked better when Fernandinho came on, and it was like, well, now we're kind of used to the way that we're playing Gundogan going forward. Just at half-time, Rob, I remember thinking, is Pep going to switch it?
Do it.
Why didn't he?
I had the argument with my son. I said, you know what managers like to do? To change at half-time might be that show that I got it wrong. So managers like to go, let's give it 10 or 15 minutes. And my son said, Dad, why is this 10 or 15 minutes? I'm telling you what will happen, exactly what happened in the first half. 10 or 15 minutes ain't going to change it. And then when he eventually brought on Fernandinho, he went, may as well have done that at half-time.
Yeah. I thought they went back to old, open, vulnerable Manchester City. I thought they were stretched throughout.
Yeah. There's two. Sorry, just before we move on, just on that very last point, because I'm sitting there watching game with my son and my few friends, and I went, by the way, Pep's turned into Pulis by the end of the game. Long ball, long throws. It was like so long ball, long throws. Wet Tuesday night at the 3-6. I mean, they started to lose a little bit of their composure, Rob.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to get onto the referee, Rob, because I thought the referee had an excellent game. Excellent. The referee.
Yeah.
And I tweeted out as such. I thought, he had a good game. And I got quite a few people talking about the Antonio Rudiger challenge on Kevin De Bruyne. I want to talk about that.
Which he's cracked his nose, hasn't he, and his eye socket.
His eye socket, which is something I did, by the way, a long time ago. And it took me a long time. I had a depressed fracture of the cheekbone as well. So it's not as bad. Okay, so He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
He blocked him off with his shoulder and it, and his, you know, and his weight. You know, he got the yellow card.
Yeah.
Some people are saying that there should have been red. Mm. What did you think to that play from Antonio Rudiger?
Antonio Rudiger does those things, or can do that. Fernandinho does those things. It's a block. He hasn't meant to cause the damage it's caused, which doesn't make it right or wrong. For me, it's a yellow card offence. The nature of the injuries makes it feel like it should be worse, but he's blocked him off and he's caught him. You know, I think he's just looking to make sure De Bruyne doesn't go the other side of him on a run. So I don't retrospectively look at what's happened physically with De Bruyne and say, right, that's got to be a red. It was a foul. It's a foul that happens in the game. Unfortunately, De Bruyne's had an injury, but I can't say the referee made a mistake and didn't give him a red. For me, I don't think it's a mistake.
Yeah, I agree, Rob. I just think it was quite close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to deliberately throw your, you know, shoulder towards.
Yeah,
it wasn't. Listen, I don't think it was direct on his face, was
no,
it?
It looked more like body action.
It must have been.
Something
must have made contact.
Yeah,
damage that it did. Mm-hmm. But I just thought it was close to red. And again, it's the only thing. I mean, and again, I agree with you, Rob. You know, I think it was a yellow and a half, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
but it's just, you know, that's kind of not okay to do that. That was a bad challenge, you know, from a player that we know is a really great defender. And I know he's physically uncompromising and he sometimes goes over the line. You know, I just thought it was over the line. And he just got away with it.
Sergio Ramos on Salah.
Mo Salah, yeah.
It was a bit similar, one of them, where he kind of knew what he was doing. I don't think that he thought the consequences would be the same. But, I think retrospectively we can all look and say, oh, you know, if De Bruyne had got up, been a bit shaken and carried on, I don't think we'd be talking about it.
Just a couple of things, Rob, like little side notes about this game and stuff like that. We've talked so much about number nines. They created nothing, Man City, in the game. Created nothing, like hardly anything.
No.
Does it increase the prospect of them going for Harry Kane?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was one of those, plug Kane in, different. Well, I haven't said that. You plug Kane into either sides, because I saw, as Werner was missing a couple of chances, well, can you imagine plugging Kane in there? That's Chelsea tuning up. Yeah. But yeah, I do. I think it makes it clearer. I think not winning it gives another drive.
Yeah.
What I would say, Rob, is there any point that group of players, I mean, it's one of those things hard to say, start to lose a bit of trust in Pep in these situations. Kevin De Bruyne, who wants to win it badly, if you're Gundogan, if you're Ruben Diaz, maybe he's new still, but are you still as committed that this guy gets it done for us?
Well, that's good, Rob, because I thought a similar thought about this is going to take a little bit of time for Pep to go over this. You know, how much self-reflection? We talked about Juan Malillo, the assistant coach.
Yeah, the assistant. Yeah.
And we feel it's helped him sort of develop. I just wonder, you know, how it's going to affect Pep. And onto that point, how it affect the players. And in a big game, you know, he went something very controversial. Yeah.
He looked drained, didn't he, after the game? He looked a bit hollow. It looked like he couldn't quite get his head around what happened.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess Sergio Aguero, Rob, is also the natural ending point for our discussion or our chat about Man City. And him coming on, I see he's in tears afterwards.
Yeah.
I did think, and I know what Robbie was thinking, he's going to do it. He's going to do something special in the game. And it wouldn't surprise anybody if he did. But at that point, Chelsea were bunkered in and were ready, roll the sleeves up and defended really, really well. And to go back real quick, Tuchel afterwards said, Rob, we're not a team that just coach and work on possession and scoring that way. We don't mind defending and counter-attacking. I mean, an all-round balanced team that obviously got the job done today, where Pep's team isn't an all-round balanced team, or it certainly wasn't in this team with a lineup. But Aguero came on and that's it for him now at Manchester City.
Yeah, it's a shame.
It's a shame the way he went out there, but of course a legend of a player that will be badly missed, you know, by those fans of Manchester City.
Yeah, but it was Chelsea's day. Brilliant sort of performance, great defensive setup. As you say, great team structure, everybody doing their job, and they got the all-important goal. And City, I'm afraid, the wait goes on for that big trophy that takes them to the next level, and you know where they can start to be seen as these global clubs. They've got to find a way to land that big trophy. Maybe Harry Kane for £120 million or so might help them on the way. There was another big game on Saturday, kicked off a lot earlier at Wembley. It was Brentford taking on Swansea in the Championship final.
Richest game in football.
The richest game in football, my friend. Which is all, and I've been involved working at it and watching it now for a few years. It's always a good game, this game, Rob. It always delivers. You always think it's going to be a real nervy affair. There'll be, you know, 0-0 for long periods. You generally, if you look down the years, they've had some classic games. Brentford getting themselves 2-0 up, pretty much got in charge of the game, maybe could have made it 3, and then a sending off around 65 minutes, I think, on the clock. Jay Fulton got sent off, and with that pretty much went Swansea's hopes of making it. How did you see this one, mate? Did you see the game?
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the game. I mean, what a great day it was for football. You know, don't get much better than that. I mean, it is an incredible occasion for those players and managers and fans to dream about playing in the Premier League. For Brentford Football Club, Robbie Earle, that have never been in the Premier League. No. And the last time in the top flight was 1947, by the way.
Correct.
So a tremendous occasion for them. Mm. I think we're going to enjoy them. I look forward to getting them to know them better because that's what we do in the Premier League. So we'll go back over the summer and we'll watch a few games in the season. We'll see what they do in the transfer market. Three at the back for the most part. I do like Mathias Jensen, a Danish midfield player, right in there, who's at the heart and soul of their football side of things. We know about the two centre-forwards at the top there. Ivan Toney, a player that you've kept a close eye on, Rob, over this last season or so. He actually did have a stint in the Premier League with Newcastle United.
Two appearances for Newcastle,
So it didn't really happen for him, so he will certainly enjoy. He got the penalty, didn't he, the first goal? And Brian...
The ball with a worldie, by the way, didn't you see the striking hit?
Did well. Yeah, it's great, wasn't it? So he's going to be...
He's mobile. He's 25 years of age, Rob. He's good size. He's mobile. He's clever with his movement. You know, he reminds me of it, and of some of our fans. And reminds me of it as an old man. He reminds me a little bit of Stan Collymore with his size.
Has he got Stan's ability? Like one-on-one?
Stan was a very, very good player.
And
the other fans go on YouTube and look up Stan Collymore. But he reminds me a bit of Stan with his movement. Good size, you know, nice touch on the ball, good appreciation. Yeah. He's been round the lower leagues. I was looking at, you know, he's been to Barnsley, to Shrewsbury, to Wigan, to Peterborough, Northampton. You know, he's done his turn at 25, but... He was bought as a replacement for Ollie Watkins, Robin. And if Brentford didn't go up, I would have been surprised if somebody didn't go for him. He's going to be in the shop window this year. He has a half decent season, and there'll be people in for him because he's got all the tools, I think, that you would need to be a Premier League striker.
Yeah, and people will hear it a lot next season, Rob, but Brentford are a forward-thinking club in terms of their recruitment. And everybody probably is aware of the Moneyball kind of recruitment strategy of stats-based analysis and picking players based on some stats. That's what they've done very well. Yeah. You've talked about Ollie Watkins, Rob. Ollie Watkins, of course, we see banging goals in for Aston Villa. He's in the England squad right now for the Euros. Yeah. Neil Mopé was another one. Saïd Benrahma, of course, went to West Ham United, is another player. So they have a history of picking good players. They've got to do it again now, maybe at a slightly different level of player with the finances available for the Premier League. And also to the manager, Thomas Frank, Rob.
Frank,
Again, you look back now because, you know, they're going to be in the big time. Took over from Aston Villa's Dean Smith. Danish coach, coached the Denmark youth teams to Bromby to Brentford. So it's not a star-studded CV, but when you give good young managers the opportunities at good clubs that have got their stuff together... You know, this is an exciting team, Rob, that I think we all kind of maybe edged to see Brentford, a different team. You know, we're going to get the Watford and Norwich back into the Premier League. Yeah. It's good to see somebody new. So I think the fans will enjoy them. They've got a lovely new stadium, which will be full, fingers crossed, for next season. So a good story, a well-run club. And I'm kind of pleased they got through.
Yeah, and I'm sure like you, I've played many times at the old Brantford Griffin Park and had many great days down there. And yeah, this is a very much new team, new setup, different way of doing things, you say, with the data and the stats. And Thomas Frank, I think, will be an addition to the Premier League. And yeah, remember the last season, Rob, seeing them losing the playoffs? And that's one of the really hard things you've got to do is to pick a team up from the playoffs that have not made it and go again. And a couple of the players we're talking about, they promised themselves that they were going to give it another good go and they would get back there again. And, you know, they deserve to play. And it's just a really good story to see them make it. So, as you're right, Thomas Frank, one to look at. Steve Cooper's interesting, Rob, at Swansea, because I've just, again, like you, just did a little bit of background on him and has been part of the England under-16, under-17 setup, was at Liverpool Youth Academy. There's a lot of people sort of saying good things about him. He's took a team close now, twice to the playoff picture. He's talking about Crystal Palace having a little look at him, West Bromwich Albion having a look at him, and whether he's one of those. So what's quite nice now we're seeing with the Championship is young managers coming and, you know, was it Ismail at Barnsley? And, you know, there's some young managers come up with young new ideas, different ways of playing. And I think we're going to be a good addition to the Premier League, going to bring something different. They're going to bring a different flavour and colour and way of doing things. And I think now there's also a blueprint, you know, and the Leeds did it in their very own unique style. But there's a way that if you can do it right, you can stay in this league, Rob. You can come up.
And don't you think what we've seen over the last, well, I guess 7 or 8 years now working with NBC and the Premier League is that most teams that do well and stay up don't change too much.
Yeah, right?
Change too much. And my last note on the Brentford story is like how much they're going to spend. We know they're going to be into $100 million for this season. Yeah. How much of that do they secure the club's future? Maybe training ground development or infrastructure development. They've got a new stadium already. And how much they put in the team into new players. So that's what's going to be fascinating. Mm. But again, I don't think we're going to see a ton of changes, Rob. I think there's belief in what they've got there. I think they will, of course, they'll bring in, they're going to have to bring in 3 or 4 or 5 players, Rob, for the squad. And hopefully some of those will add and improve that first 11. Because I think, again, teams coming into the Premier League from the playoffs, you know, you're not that great a team because you haven't won the championship. So, you know, over the 46 games or whatever it is, you know, they aren't as good as the Norwich and the Watford. So they are going to struggle themselves. So that's a challenge for Brentford. That is a challenge. And then they've got to go on the transfer market and try and improve their first 11 for the challenges ahead.
Yeah, but wish them luck and looking forward to seeing them start next season, as you say. A little bit of new research for us this summer when we go through the Brentford team. But yeah, we'll be ready to go for them on August 14th, the big kickoff of the Premier League.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We got to that time of the year, mate, where we go for the major awards in English football. Our two Robbie's end of season awards. All the players are on bated breath. We've had agents phoning us up. We've had players phoning us up saying why they aren't in certain categories. Well, we're just for a bit of fun going to talk about our two Robbie's end of season awards. I'm going to start with a category, Rob. I want to know who you feel is your most improved sort of player and manager of the season. So who at day one is caught your eye and continue to do well during the season? It might not be an obvious choice. It could be someone slightly more under the radar has achieved in their own category.
Well, I think from our little list here that we put together, Rob, I think there's players that came very close to me picking them. John Stones, Ilkay Gundogan, and Kelechi Iheanacho. All three have had you know, have had really good seasons. I would have to go, though, with Ilkay Gundogan, Rob, based on his improvement and his, like, wow, like goal tally.
Yeah.
Helped win them the Premier League. So as much as I, you know, I really appreciate a lot of the players on our list here. We've got like nine or 10 players and managers. Yeah. I still think the effect on the season, I would give my most improved player or manager to Ilkay Gundogan.
And I would slightly go down another route, and it's a player I think you picked out for one of the underappreciated. Patrick Bamford, my friend. Patrick Bamford. Mm. Leeds United came up into the Premier League. Patrick Bamford, at only a young age, was almost seen like a journeyman, championship striker. He was a classic championship striker who couldn't quite cut it in the Premier League.
Yeah.
He's been at plenty of places, and he gets two or three goals, and he's comes from reasonably privileged background, and he doesn't really need the game that much, and he's not that hungry, and he won't score lots of goals. Well, he actually did. I think it was 17 in the end. Yep. Led the Leeds line well, was a good target man, was on the fringe of England duties. And from where we were at day one, Rob, saying, oh, Patrick Bamford, Leeds, where they're going to get goals, to finishing at the end of the season, 17 goals, being up there with the best finishes in the country, Patrick Bamford wins my most improved player of the season.
Most disappointing player and or manager, Robbie Earl. Again, I'm going to cut to one that just comes to, I just can't believe what happened to them. Chris Wilder and Sheffield United. There's a lot of, again, there's other names on here that maybe you get into some detail with, Rob,
but
Chris Wilder's from 9th to 20th after spending $75 million, including a club record signing of a striker. And they didn't have that many injuries, Rob. To finish 20th tells you all you need to know about the Premier League and how hard it is to stay there. I just, disappointment. Wow. Chris Wilder and Sheffield United.
Well, I'm going to go for two players, Rob, and two players who I've kind of supported, backed, talked about why things might not be happening. Two players who disappointed me this season. Dele Alli. I think his career's at a crossroads, Rob. And I know that we can talk about his management. We can talk about the situation at Spurs. We can talk about a lot of things about it, and I get it.
Yeah.
But Dele Alli himself, and I heard somebody say, is Dele Alli being the best person he can be to get Dele Alli back to where he wants to be, back to where he should be? We've got a Euro campaign coming up, an England squad of 33 players, and Dele Alli's not in there.
Yeah, it's a good shout. I just
understand circumstances and understand manager and understand things. But come on, Dele, you're a top player. You can be a difference, mate. You can be a 15 goal a season if you play. And my other one, Rob, and I actually picked two, and I know we, Anthony Martial.
Yeah, I thought about him again. I'd give him a bit of a break because of his injuries, but go ahead.
I mean, where are we with Anthony Martial? Yeah. Where are we? You know, is he good enough to be a Manchester United leader?
No.
I don't think so. I think we're end up going to lose him. So he's just with the platform and the progression of Manchester United, just disappointed that we haven't seen enough of Anthony Martial, who again could be 15 to 20 goal scorer and an absolutely key part of what United are doing.
Next category. Back on the positive, best signings. Now, the January standouts, Robbie Earl, I think we went through it, were Jesse Lingard and Joe Willock. Tremendous loan signings from their prospective clubs to their new clubs, made a huge impact. But overall, Rob, going back to the summer, I'll start. I mean, there's a ton here. I could talk about the Aston Villa signings.
Took them from
just avoiding relegation to a really good Premier League finish. There's a ton of them. There's a ton of them out there. Even Edison Cavani's free transfer. But again, you do have to consider what happened in the season. And I think I'm going for all Man City players. Ruben Dias, Rob. And I think, to be fair, I think he has been most people's player of the season, given the impact that he's made defensively for the football club. So again, like, we can be tainted on the back of the Champions League final. And a bit of Man City fatigue, I guess. But it's predominantly about the Premier League, Rob. Our awards here, and Ruben Dias wins it for me.
Yeah, as you say, there's lots of candidates. People we could have in there. about Chiazze has come in, you know, obviously a bad injury at the end of the season. I thought he's one man. Thomas Souček, you know, I love him in midfield. Pierre-Emile Højbjerg sort of goes under the radar, but in terms of the season, what he's brought to a football club, has been probably Spurs' most consistent player, outside of Harry Kane, maybe. I'm going to go Robbie Musto for Wesley Fofana.
Oh, interesting.
In terms of when kid came in, we weren't really sure what he was, who he was. If you put him on the market now, you'd probably get three times his value. He'd go to any of the top six teams and start in their side. Yeah. He's a kind of one kid. Was he 20 years of age, I think, Rob?
Yeah, he's really young. Yeah.
That, you know, next to a Van Dijk, next to a Maguire, next to, you know, Arsenal would kill for him.
You know, Man United,
all day long to Maguire. So Wesley Fofana, Robbie Musto coming in, yeah. and part of, and I want to tip my hat to Leicester's recruitment, because we can put Castagne, Soyuncu, Ndidi, Tielemans, Madison, the list goes on. A good recruitment at a football club. It's won them an FA Cup. It's got them fifth in the league and gives Brendan an opportunity to really challenge that top four. Mm.
Worst signings, ooh. Robbie Earl. Again, there's a few on our little list here.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with, again, not necessarily be his fault, but you've got to say Donny van de Beek, Man United's been shockingly disappointing. Again, other managers
might have the opportunities. Some might say they had the opportunities. Yeah,
but what is he doing in training then, Rob? What is he doing in training? And we saw him in other competitions. And again, it may be a little unfair, but this is how we're seeing it, and this is what's happened this season. He's done nothing for Manchester United. Yeah. So Donny van de Beek, I mean, big fee. I haven't got the fee, but it was a big fee to bring him.
Yeah,
into
50 odd, wasn't it? 50 odd million.
It was $50 million. So that has to go down as not really a very good signing.
Worst signings of the season, without any shadow of a doubt. Step forward, Mr. Rian Brewster. 30, and not least because it's the most challenging figure I've ever seen. $30.5 million. Is it 30 or 31? What's a 30 and
a half? It's all about the exchange rate. It's all about the exchange rate, my friend.
Well, he needs to exchange a few goals. Bless him. He's come from Liverpool, Rob, with, I think, got 11 goals in the Championship with Swansea. No real track record. He came in, was bought into a Sheffield United team that's built for somebody to score goals and never look likely. And times didn't play, Rob. So, again, what are we seeing in training? What's Chris Wilder seeing that he doesn't even start him at times? And recently, was it Jeberson, some of the young kid who's like 17, 18 years of age, plays ahead of him later on. So, big season for Rian Brewster. He's going to be in the Championship. He has scored goals there, and he scores some goals and gets Sheffield United back into the Premier League.
Underappreciated player of the season, a category, Rob, that is really close to our hearts, mate. We always try and pick out somebody who's done a great job and yet doesn't always get the recognition. And this may be, like, you've already mentioned this player, Rob, underappreciated player of the season for me is Patrick Bamford, given similar reasons to what you gave, Rob. 17 Premier League goals in a season in a team that you wouldn't have expected to be anywhere near as prolific as Leeds have. And as Patrick Bamford has done, again, a player that's had little sniffs of Premier League before, hasn't really looked like he's been up for it. But underappreciated because he's on, we looked at the top scoring list in the Premier League, like, look at him there. He's right there. I mean, that's not easy to do. And I just wonder if football in general, whether you're watching in the US or England or wherever it is, appreciates what Patrick Bamford has done and how hard it is for any striker. We've talked about many strikers, Rob, on this episode.
Yeah.
It's not easy to score in the Premier League, and Leeds, the manager, and the way that they play helps. But Bamford has had a phenomenal season, and I don't think he's been given the credit he deserves.
Yeah, absolutely, Patrick Bamford. And we'll see now next season when the pressure comes on, people will say, well, is he one season wonder? He's going to have to sort of hit those somewhere near those numbers again. But yeah, certainly a good season for him. My underappreciated player of the season, who maybe is not quite so underappreciated after a magnificent performance yesterday in the Champions League, N'Golo Kante, Robin Musto, is just the most understated, under the radar, underappreciated footballer in possibly world football. He's taken the role, they used to call it the Makalele role. There's going to be a Kante role after, because he's Makalele plus. he does what Makélélé does in the way that he tactically is in the pass lanes. He wins the ball. He can tackle. He can instigate that first pass. He's got a good passing range off both feet. But he can drive forward. He's got that big toe that I talk about. He nicks it past people and he can make things happen. And for all your talent, for all your attacking edge that does things at one end, for all the defensive setup the other, this guy's as important to both those elements of your team. He's an absolute worldie and is my underappreciated performer of the season.
It's a good shout, Rob, because I think, to be fair, after the Champions League final, he is getting some appreciation. Mm. Yeah. But I still don't think we're talking about a player in this role that I'm not sure there's been a better player for as long as I can remember of doing that specific job of breaking up play, reading the game, making the tackles, but also, by the way, as you said many times, Rob, just poking the ball and making those little runs forward and trying to help attack away with an incredible engine. Yeah, it's a great shout because even though it feels like he's been appreciated, I don't know whether people really know just how good he is. When you're starting to compare him with Victor Makélélé, Rob, and then
with a great song.
Okay,
last one, my friend, manager of the season, because I want you to. I know Pep Guardiola was very much high on your list, very much the man of the moment.
Gosh, and I know
after
that
what we saw yesterday.
I can't give it him. And I know at the start of this, I know at the start of this, I said this is predominantly Premier League, and it is. Yeah. But with that. You know, what we saw yesterday, I just can't do it. I can't give Pep, even though he's had a really good season domestically, what was it, 12-point gap, made some defensive changes.
Yeah.
So, you know, listen, of course, he's right there and we'll win awards based on what he's done. But again, it's fresh in my mind, so I'm not giving him this one. So I go down the list. I'm like, oh, I'm not sure. You know, and maybe listeners would have seen this coming. Marcelo Bielsa, Leeds United, giving it him. Finish where they finish in the league table right now, scoring more goals than a lot of the big clubs. You know, coming into this league is so, so difficult to play the football that they play with the abandon for defending. And we're all about attack and we'll do it differently with man-to-man markers. And again, some people might roll their eyes. They have heard this a lot, but it's so different and it's so effective and so surprising how effective it was. It is still in my thinking. I mean, really, Rob, you know, there's no stars in this team, really. We've just talked about how he's got the best out of Patrick Bamford, Stuart Dallas, Luke Ayling at left back. There's so many potential player of the seasons with Leeds United. You go through their team, they've all had great seasons. And for him to come into this division, the first time into this league, playing his unique style of play and being as effective as he's been, I mean, what are they in the league table? They are ninth place, Rob. They break the top 10 is phenomenal. So I'm going for Marcelo Bielsa. Have that.
Marcelo Bielsa. I can't really argue with Marcelo.
What are you going to do?
Maybe defensively. It's really interesting what I'm going to do, Mr. Musto. David Moyes went very, very close. David Moyes went just very close with the turnaround. Just dropped off at the end, but they've got European football. Pat on the back for David Moyes. I'm going to go for Mr. Musto for Thomas Tuchel. Thomas Tuchel. And let me tell you why. The Chelsea Football Club job is one of the most demanding jobs in club football because of the way the club is, because of the ownership group, because of the profile around the football club. There's always something happening at Chelsea. I've always said when I worked there, there's always something coming out. There's always gossip. There's always something going on. To take that job in 6 months, to beat Pep Guardiola three times, to replace a legendary manager, draw your first game 0-0 against Wolves and people not be sure what you're about. To take this team from where they were to a top four finish again that Frank did okay, to a Champions League final and out-tactic Pep, or Pep might have out-tacted himself, but Pep out-tacted himself is because Tuchel got in his head. He'd beaten two times before they got there. For the development of some of the players we've seen, for the first time I sense, Robbie Musto, and we'll record this and we'll be laughing about it when he gets sacked next year, I sense there could be some longevity, a little bit like a Jose Mourinho. He's come into this football club and bang, hit the ground running, got something about him, that, like you say, a little bit of nasty, a little bit smart, a little bit tactical, a little bit of humour. I just think Chelsea might have got one. I look at where Spurs are. Look at where Arsenal are. They kill for Thomas Tuchel. My manager of the season, Thomas Tuchel.
Like it. Yeah, don't mind it. Don't mind it, mate. The last one, player of the season. Again, We saw an interesting game of football yesterday in Champions League final.
Yeah.
And it is going to kind of affect my thinking here. And of course, tons of players have had big seasons.
Yeah.
So you might be surprised at this one, Rob. Harry Kane.
I'm not surprised.
23 Premier League goals, Golden Boot, 14 assists in a team that was coached predominantly by Jose Mourinho, that we know is super defensive, and it's not always his first priority is to feed his attacking players in general play. I mean, he's got a great number of goals there, most on a counter attack.
Yeah.
But the way his game's evolved a little bit in a struggling team in a difficult season, the numbers are phenomenal. I mean, I know that we expect big numbers of Harry Kane, Rob, but this particular season, given the manager, given the team's kind of like up and down nature, he still did his work. And I just think when you think about other star players, there's Ruben Diaz. You know, I gave him the best signing of the season, and his effect on the club is obviously very, very strong. We know De Bruyne is a magnificent player. We know that Ilkay Gundogan produced, you know, 13 Premier League goals from midfield that enabled them to be where they are. I just think, and it's hard, you know, sometimes easy, Rob, to just get flippant and you get used to Harry Kane scoring the goals.
This season,
I just think, you know, it's got to be Harry Kane for me.
It's a good shout, and it's been a difficult season for Spurs, and, you know, for him to be top goal scorer and top assists and keep that standard, well, we'll see him next season. You're right, mentioned all the people. I just want to chuck in Bruno Fernandes in there. I just thought his season dipped a little bit at the end, and obviously disappointment not winning the Europa League. But Bruno Fernandes, in terms of goals and assists, there was a time, Rob, when everything he did was what was good about Manchester United. So he gets mentioned. I'm going to go back where you went, though. I'm not going to allow one poor game, and I actually think one poor tactical team sheet by his manager, Ruben Diaz.
Yeah.
I'll go back to the PSG game, you know, where the Champions League, where he's getting balls smashed in his face, and he's putting his body in, and he's working his team, and, you know, for all the League Cup now and the Premier League, and in a different day with a different setup, he could be a Champions League winner. I know he didn't. But I'm going to say Ruben Diaz was a difference maker, made me think differently about Man City, made me look differently about Man City. He would be my player of the season, despite being on the wrong side in the Champions League final.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, I think if you can kind of separate the two and you kind of look back, of course, he's had a huge impact. And two brilliant players, Rob, two brilliant seasons. Mm. Now, I'm going to let you do the odds, mate, because you've done it most of the season. PointsBet Sportsbook have thrown out some odds for next season's winner of the 21-22 Premier League. Come on, mate, give me the odds.
Well, as you may expect or may not expect after yesterday, Manchester City are favourites. They're minus 150.
Wow, Chelsea, strong favourite.
Strong favourites, minus 150. Chelsea come in second at plus 500, again after the Champions League win. Liverpool, the favourites, just outside at plus 550. Manchester United, who finished second, let's remember this time, are plus 700. And then we go out to the likes of Leicester, fifth place finish this time, at plus 3,300. Tottenham are plus 4,000. Arsenal are plus 6,000. And Everton, outside, is at plus 9,000. So the front four we're talking about, top four, they've got Man City at minus 150, Chelsea at plus 500, Liverpool just outside at plus 550, and Manchester United plus 700. How are you thinking? Where's your hard-earned dollar going, my friend?
Well, it's not going to close the gap? It's not going to go on Man City. I know that at those odds, at minus 150, it's just not. I mean, I know we say it's probably every year, Rob, at this time, but can you imagine how good the Premier League is going to be next season? Back to normal, full stadiums, teams finding their way to be improving, Chelsea being that guy. Yeah. Liverpool, their injuries will come back. Mm-hmm. And side note, I'm making all my notes for Liverpool. Ibrahima Konate, 22 years of age, French centre-back, $50 million from RB Leipzig. It's one of those clause, the buyout clause in the contract.
Liverpool.
I mean, 22. I've watched him a little bit. I've just spent a little bit of time yesterday watching for him. Think of a much better defensive Yaya Toure. He's that sort of build, Rob. and he can play a little bit. He can come out with the ball and he can play, distribute and try and get forward. But obviously he's more defensive minded than that. Loves a last ditch tackle, a sliding tackle. So exciting. Again, I apologize if he hasn't. I mean, it's imminent if he hasn't signed already.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much done, isn't it? Yeah, they're
so that's interesting for Liverpool, potentially him alongside.
Interesting with Caban and Davies, whether they go back to, you know, go back
I
to
think Caban's going team. Back.
Is he going back? And
Davies. And it is official. Yeah. It is official.
It's official.
Yeah,
be interesting with that. So at the back, Liverpool making changes. What about the front, Rob? Will there be changes? Will one of them leave? You know, will the mix up? That's the thing I think Jurgen Klopp's going to have to work out during this summer.
And where does Harry Kane go, Rob? Where does
Harry Kane going to match changes the odds? I'm telling you, if you plug him into United, you plug him into Chelsea. I might have a little sneaky Robbie Musto, depending on how things go for Chelsea Football Club at plus 500. I might have a little. I might just see what summer window's going on. Hold back, keep my purse strings tight for a little while. But if they have a decent summer, it's not a bad squad of players. The right centre forward and a little bit of tinkering here and there. Maybe one or two going out, making room for one or two coming in. They've got a good manager, they've got a decent squad, and they've got an ambitious owner, Rob. So I think a spare dollar of mine might go on Chelsea. Well, listen, mate, that's it for what a season we've had. I don't think when we kicked it off, we were quite sure where it was all going to end up, but we got to the end of the Premier League, got to the end of the Champions League, and we got end of the Championship final. So it's a team.
We're going to make sure we thank everybody. You know, we've got to thank everybody that's listening to this podcast. It's grown and grown and grown.
The numbers have been great, haven't they?
Right now. So thanks everybody so much for you know, listening to more of our stuff every week or
commenting,
twice a week.
Agreeing, disagreeing. We're happy to agree, disagree. We'll jump on Twitter when we can and we respond to you. But you're right, mate.
Tremendous support.
Everybody who supported us, listened to us and talked about the podcast. And we'll be ready starting next season to go again. But it was a team from the King's Road that become the Kings of Europe, my friend. As Chelsea beat Man City in the Champions League final elsewhere, it's the first time in the Premier League for Brentford as they win the Championship playoff final. That's it for this season. Musty and I are going to put our feet up and watch England win the Euros this year, my friends. But also remember, I recently sat down with Premier League Hall of Famer Thierry Henry. We're going to release that podcast on the Two Robbies platform over the next couple of weeks. So keep an eye out for that. Some really interesting stuff. And as you can imagine, Thierry Henry, always interesting and got things to say. But for the last time this season, I'm Earl. He's Musto, together with the Two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. We really appreciate you. Have a great summer. Be safe. Be healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.